Hey, Says here, and today we have the CEO and co-founder of Instant Paddle, Christopher Grenfell. Did he really create the portable paddle court? I had a chance to meet with you at RacketX. You had a booth there, and I found your product like super interesting. But let's first talk about you, your background in paddle.
Sure. First of all, my name is Christopher, and I'm based in Stockholm, Sweden. My greatest accomplishment is my four kids. And apart from that, I've been working within the tech industry for 20 years. But then in 2020, during the boom in Sweden, I got to meet my colleague that had an idea. And he didn't really do anything about it until we start talking about it. We went partner around it, and that's where Instant Paddle was born.
So did you play paddle before, or did you even see paddle, or when were you introduced to paddle?
Yeah, of course. I mean, from like 2015, 16, paddle was growing tremendously in Sweden, and it got its boom during, you know, COVID as well. So I was playing a lot, like a recreational player. I really thought I was a really good player in the beginning. But then the more I played, the more I started to learn that this is an easy game to start learning how to play, but it's almost impossible to master.
Oh, yeah, I hear that. When you first start playing, you're playing all the time. You feel like you're like playing so well in the master until you find somebody that plays so much better. Yeah. You realize, oh boy, I got a long way to go. Yeah. So did you play any other racket sports prior?
Yeah, I was, playing tennis. I done a lot of sports when I was a kid. I was mainly a golfer. I could actually call me a pretty good golfer back in the days. But I was playing a lot of tennis, basketball. I was not pro or anything. I was just trying to hit the ball over the net.
So what made you get into this business? You know, I know your friend talked a little bit about it, but what made you say, hey, look, I'm going to make module, portable, or how would you call it, like non-permanent courts?
Yeah, so basically We're a world unique mobile or portable or modular court, right? Okay. And I think me being an entrepreneur for so many years have learned sometimes that when you feel something and that you see something, actually do something about it. And I think the greatest sort of synergy between me and my 20-year-old younger friend is that he was frustrated because during the boom in Sweden, there was so much people playing, but it was a lot of premium stamp to it. It was very expensive to play. It was really hard to get a time. And he's coming from a background being a soccer professional, working a lot with kids and families and societies, and seeing like what kind of impact the sport can do for the communities. And he wanted to do something about it. So basically he asked a question, like, does it have to be so complicated to build a traditional or to build a paddle court?
Gotcha. Okay, so what is this void filling, or who is this court for?
Yeah, so basically the court is for all the recreational players that wants to have fun with the game, that wants to have accessibility and just get to, I mean, either start just playing, trying it out, but also all the intermediate players just want to have a go. It's also, of course, for, you know, elite players just want to have a fun, you know, game. Because you can, I mean, our court is delivering the game. But like, just as an example, in Spain, they started off in playing with concrete walls. Now it's glass panels, right? Or If you look at tennis sport, you have surface like it's grass or clay or hard true. So it's basically about securing that, you know, paddle is a type of game where you use the walls, and when you, you know, have a different type of rule system, that is the same for our courts. But what we did is that we basically made sure to become more mobile. The story is that a lot of traditional courts, as well as traditional portable courts still needs a lot of handling, a lot of heavy lift weighting machines, and a lot of ground constructions or permits. But our solution don't need that. And that makes our court perfect in some, I mean, in some cases, and not, of course, we're not relevant for all projects out there.
Okay, Christopher, who is this paddle court for?
Yeah, so basically, I mean, I already told you guys about us wanting to have onboarding from the intermediate and recreational play. But I also really want to emphasize on the fact, like, how should you best utilize or use this court? And a good example is for, you know, Glen Eagles Hotel in Scotland. They were interested to bring in paddle to their members. They didn't have any permits. They didn't want to invest large amount of money because they didn't have the data, right? So what they did is that they put two instant paddle courts on their existing tennis court. And during one season, they got enough data, enough interest, and really great response. So now they're building a permanent paddle arena at their premises. Another great example is, you know, tennis clubs are suffering today, having older members sometimes being very reluctant to new sports, whereas the tennis needs to be broadened out to be become more racket friendly, if you know what I mean. And it's very tough sometimes economically for tennis clubs to invest in, you know, scrapping a tennis for paddle because they don't have the data. So tennis clubs, for instance, they can have one or two courts up and just get the data. And in UK, we had 3 months us there at the Torquay Club in tennis in UK, and they got 60 new members in 3 months. And it was totally new target groups coming into their club. And I think that the future, no matter what, is about being open, about trying out and giving sort of the accessibility. If it's pickles, paddle, or tennis, it doesn't matter. It's about getting people the joy of socializing as many hours at a club and then let them choose what kind of sport they want to play.
Wow, that's great. Now, that's clubs. What if it was just a normal person, not a club, that is interested in doing something like this? What preparations would they need before moving forward with this?
Yeah, so that's a good question, because a lot of times, if you look at a person that is entrepreneurial, they need to basically, first of all, just be very curious about finding space. Let's say they walk back and forth to the kids' school and they see a dead area that is not used. It's all about them, you know, being curious about how can I get this space and in what ways can I get this space for usage of paddle. And I think that a lot of people walk around sometimes thinking, oh, here, it should be great, right? But I mean, I really know that by just doing it, trying out, calling the people that are in charge of these land, they are really happy about somebody taking charge of that, because nobody wants dead areas. Everybody wants dead areas to become active and social and fun for the social impact part. So I think it's like, on a general term, it's like, if you think it, find out and do it. And right. There's a lot of ways.
Yeah, so it's more location, right? Land. That's probably the first step, correct? And approaching
the goal of paddle. Yeah, and the goal of paddle is space. Space and land. And when you do the inventory of space, then you will know, am I going to build traditional or am I going to build with instant paddle? It's pretty simple. And I will guide them. If they think instant paddle in the wrong location, I will tell them that they should do the traditional way.
Wow, that's great. That's a great information for somebody interested in pursuing this. We get a lot of calls inquiring about creating clubs. And I found your core very interesting, because I think, especially in the areas that you have to educate people what paddle is, being able to put up a court very quickly, not go through the whole process of permits and everything, and just kind of with a minimum investment and educate the people in the area, kind of see if the people are engaging and reacting to paddle. And then at that point, if you feel it is, at that point, you can move forward to the second stage and opening up a club. So I found that very, very interesting. Have you seen people doing that?
Yeah. And I think I want to give the listeners an idea, like, what are we? Because it's we basically made some changes into the material. A traditional court is often built with glass panels. Only the glass panels itself weigh around 250 kilos. And that means that it's a lot of heavyweight construction, whereas you also, in order to like sort of bolt down the court, you need permits to do that. As soon as you bolt down the court, you need some kind of permit, like major permits.
Let's talk about that. Okay, so let's talk about the court. You said glass is replaced by what material?
Yeah, so basically what we tested out in the factory is polycarbonate panels. And it's basically like plexi, like plastic, hard plastic panels. And it's called polycarbonates, which are unbreakable. But also they weigh, instead of the 250 kilos, they weigh around 90 kilos.
Wow. Okay.
And that means that two people can carry this panel without having heavyweight machines.
How about its durability and how does it react to the ball compared to glass?
So basically all the recreational players, I mean, we have had hundreds of thousands of people playing us over 3.5 years now. Nobody's really reacting to it or noticing it or thinking about it. Because in the recreational type of play, like you use them and whatever, but you don't have the expectancy of the perfection. Okay. And I think that the number one thing sometimes is not always go for the perfection, but always sometimes go for the good enough in order to secure what we are having today.
So the average player is not going to notice anything.
No, I mean, they come in and they can get the same bounce when you hit a lot of shots. And when the elite players comes in, they will, of course, notice a bit of difference, but they can adjust very fast because they are, you know, good players.
Yeah, yeah. Just like all clubs have different, you know, turfs, different courts, and speed and is different, and you have to adjust a little bit.
And you come in and you play like 10 minutes and you adjust like to the floor, you adjust to the panel or the, you know, whatever, and then you have a good game.
Gotcha, gotcha. Okay, so how about the turf? I know you have turf, you know, traditionally. What do you guys use for your platform there?
Yeah, so basically the invention we have or the sort of uniqueness is our cage. We can use any turf, but when we come on like a parking lot, like and we're going to be there for a season, let's say, the best turf to use if you're going to move it around is tiles. It's like plastic tiles, whereas we today have VersaCourt, which is US based company, and they use like their sports court are all over the place in the US, like all the 3-on-3 basketball, the tennis, outdoor for the, you know, field hockey or whatever. And they have like a good grip. They have, you know, being innovative within the sports to secure the short stops and non-injuries as well as, you know, everything. And then, of course, the bounce. And when it comes to the bounce, we give a bit better of a bounce. Like it's a bit faster, our court, on the tiles. But the recreational players really more appreciate that because it's a bit easier. Whereas the pros, again, you know, they adjust.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about the subflooring because I think that's important. This is made to go on top of, let's say, asphalt, correct?
Yeah. So basically, all type of surface, which is hard from the start, we can just build it up on there. And the only thing we need to do is adjustment to make sure that it's even, leveled out.
That's what I was going to ask you, because most, you know, asphalt, let's say if you're going to do it at a park, if you're going to do it at a parking lot or somewhere, they're not going to be perfectly level. So how do you deal with that? You're still going to have to do some type of subflooring where you're leveling it off. And how do you guys do that?
Yeah. So there are numbers of different ways. And basically, you know, the VersaCourt guys that, you know, work with this every day because they always need the level floor and hard surface, right? But one way to do it on a parking lot is stone base. You have like 0.8 gravel stone, like it could be like parking material, like and then you level it out and you water it and then you pack it and you whack it, like you press it really hard, so it becomes like a temporary concrete. It becomes like hard but it's very easy to restore.
So the other question is, how about weather-wise? So when it rains, how does that affect the sub base there?
Yeah, so basically, first of all, the tiles that we're using have holes within, and they are drainage by themselves. Okay. So like we don't get the puddles.
But the sub bottom doesn't erode.
No, because you have like a rubber mat, over the sort of stone base.
Okay.
So you cover it, right? So that is not a problem at all.
Gotcha. Okay, that's smart. Right. And as long as you have somewhat of a pitch, the water will flow one way.
Exactly.
Wow, that's great. Okay, so let's talk about.
I just want to say what's interesting. I mean, we've done like 160 installs in 18 countries now. And the interesting part is that the groundwork cost for this leveling out is around $5,000 to $10,000.
Okay.
Which means that, for many people that work with traditional solutions, pay way more. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Yep. No, I get it. Okay. So you're looking at 5 to 10 versus, let's say, 18 to 20 or 22,000, a traditional.
I would say more. I don't know what the price is in Europe, but like if you go and I'm going to install one or two quarts in Europe, you're looking at $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 for one quart. Yeah.
Down here, one quart is going to be anywhere from 18 to maybe 25 at the most. Yeah. So I guess roughly the same. I guess it depends in the area that you're at here in the U.S.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's pretty good. So let's talk about the actual core. I mean, what is it made out of? Is it made of metal? Is it galvanized? Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So our manufacturer is Paracore Deluxe, which is one of the world's largest manufacturers. I mean, they're sending out 3,000 quarts a year worldwide. And we are using the exact same material as traditional quartz when it comes to galvanized steel and their high quality type of structure. The only thing we have changed is the glass to polycarbonate, and then we can use different type of floorings.
Gotcha. Okay, so now is this secured to the asphalt or to whatever you're doing, or it's not?
So when we are on the asphalt, we don't usually secure it or bolt it. But there are options to bolt it if needed. If you're on a location where it's let's say windy or stuff like that, you can secure it and do it permanently.
Okay. So let's talk about the net and poles, right? So you need a net, and then you have the poles on the side. How are the poles secured to the ground? Do you have to bolt those down?
No. So nothing is to be bolted. And basically, what we have done is that we have a structure of a T, which has a stable function. It's pretty heavy, that is like on each corner. And then we have the net that is tightening up, but we come up to the right level and we don't need to bolt it, but we do have like clamors. So like, if you look at the entrance of the paddle court, we can secure it in the cage itself, but we don't need to bolt it into the ground.
Oh, that's smart. Gotcha. All right. I was wondering about that. Yeah. Okay. So are these quartz really, they're non-permanent, correct? And so are they really portable? Would you say it's portable? How long will it take to take down, and how long will it take?
Yeah, so what we usually say to the clients is they can build it up in 4 to 6 hours. The record is a UK team, Game for Paddle, that have built it up in 2 hours and 30 minutes.
So when you say 4 to 6, is that 2 people, 3 people,
no, it's four people? It's 4 people. So okay. you need one people with a practical brain, and then you need 3 muscles.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, do you need any type of special equipment to put these up, or just, human power?
It's basically like an IKEA version of a quart, but we don't forget to send the screws, right?
Oh, yeah.
So it's a clickable setup with no tools. And basically how it works is that when you connect the two first panels, like the corner, and then you basically connect the panel with the leg, because we have legs around the quartz.
Yep.
Then you have the first setup, and then you just continue panel by panel and securing it with a leg to the ground. And when the leg is secured to the ground, there you get the stability of the court.
Gotcha, gotcha. Okay, so how many courts of these do you have, to the world? How many courts do you have out there?
Yeah, so basically we have 160. We've done 160 installations in 18 countries, and it's going to be soon 20 countries. And the fun part, I think, is that, we come from Sweden. It was a crazy boom. We ended up in an overgrowth. I think we had 4,000 courts over a period. I think it's down to like maybe 2,500. But what's very interesting from my perspective is to see the growth of paddle in all of the countries outside. And only in the UK, like in London area, we have 14 courts in the London area with instant paddle.
Wow. Okay, so do you have any courts down here in the US?
We have within 3 weeks, we are going to assemble our first court in New York at the West Side Tennis Club, which is an iconic place for the tennis lovers, hosted, I think, 60 US Open and some Davis Cup as well.
Wow, that's amazing. I hope you get one down here in Florida. I'd love to actually see it and play on it and see how it plays. I've played paddle, 3-4 times a week. I'm dying to see how that court plays. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about cost. How much does one of these things cost? How long will it take to get delivered to your location? And do you guys have a warehouse here in the US?
Yeah, all good questions. The cost of a court is $41,000.
Okay.
And it's basically connected to with the delivery of, I would say, 4 weeks, depending, because the ship itself, we're shipping from Alicante in Spain.
Okay.
And the journey there is only like 1 week. But it's all about how to get a slot in the container business, because the container, every week it's different story of both cost and also timing. Right. So when we sell our courts to the States or overseas, we give the right expectancy of getting the client to confirm, but also when they are confirmed, we can find out like the delivery time. Over to the question of like, how are we going to build up our market in the US? That's the like $1 billion question for many, because there are very few manufacturers that wants to start heavily without having the right number, secured. And therefore it's all about building up storages. Whereas our strategy is that we're activating resellers and distributors in the US, basically having them to have 1 or 3 or 5 courts, whereas we're going to have many resellers that is going to be representing us, having us in their portfolio, because the number one purpose for us being there is how can we activate an area? How can we, the ones that make this sport more accessible instead of waiting for permits, for finance, and getting the longer journey around?
Well, that's a good question. Finance, do you guys have finance for the courts? Do you guys provide
the finance? You mean leasing?
Yeah, leasing or financing it out. Do you guys have a third party company that does that, or do you guys do it?
Yeah, we do, but due to the world economics right now, it's not the perfect ideal for the customers. Back in the days when we started, I would say 80-90% of the deals were made with leasing.
Wow.
But right now the interest rates and also the sort of security that you need to have is not often as applicable as it was some years ago.
Right. So what's next for Instant Paddle? I mean, what's the goal for Instant Paddle in the next few years?
Yeah, I mean, I got a baby Instant Paddle. I pursued an idea that I really loved, because it was all about how can we make it more accessible? How can we make a social impact about broaden the sport and getting people to try the sport at certain areas? How can we make the sport more central? I mean, in Europe, people drive like 30 minutes, right?
Yeah.
During this journey, my passion have grown for the activity and the activation rather than paddle only. So we're actually launching now something called Instant Courts. And that is because if we just change the flooring of our cage, we can have basketball and soccer. And all of a sudden have a lot of sports being played at our cage, right?
So multiple
my
sports.
Future is all about getting people, I mean, building dream team of circus of people that are passionate about making social impact, getting, you know, getting land and space that is not used, and making sure that they get used with our solution.
Wow, that's great. I mean, especially the multi-sport, I'm seeing that more and more.
Yeah.
Being able to put basketball, you know, the paddle, volleyball, all those multiple sports is what I can see in residential. Now, you said you had 160 courts out. Is that in a residential or commercial? What is the ratio there?
I don't know. I mean, we sell like 2 to 4 courts here and there. Like if a client asks me like, hey, I have a site, I have a long-term site with, I want to build 6-8 courts, I actually recommend them to go with the traditional courts.
Gotcha.
Because then our advantages are basically gone. But a lot of existing business that want to add something to their, like if it's a hotel or a university or, you know, their site, we install like 1 to 4 courts as an addition to. So the normal, I would say like in UK, they have like 2 to 4 courts. That is sort of a venue, but not more, because then you can just build traditional.
All right, right. So you're doing more commercial stuff then.
Yeah, and I think that like I'm really after the councils, the park and recreations, and the communities, but they really, really hard to work and get into. Like, I'm not going to give up, right? But it's really taking a long time, and everybody just say yes, but nothing happens. So
that is
my main mission, is like to really get them to understand how many sites we have out there that is not used or is really bad, right? Why can't we just make sure to get operators to get access to that so they can get some activity in line there?
Yeah, maybe that's part of the business, you know, being able to have somebody have that information to help people get into those areas, because that's kind of key. You know,
yeah.
You have somebody that doesn't have experience, knows paddle, knows where to get a court from you, but really doesn't know the process of trying to work with a town, you know, park, and put a court up there.
Yeah.
And maybe they go down there, you talk to them, and then it's kind of like a dead end for them, you know?
Yeah. I mean, also, so like, if you look at all the car parking operators, they have so many spaces that are not they're not using. And they are so open to rev shares, because they just want to commercialize that space, but they can't lease it out for more than 2 years.
Right.
So in that sense, if you look at an operator side in the US, for instance, also in Europe, they need to like get funding of like, you know, $2 million, $3 million, $5 million pre-money to hope for getting that back in 3 to 5 years.
Right.
So there's different type of place. And I think that what's essential to understand is that I don't see myself as a challenger or a competitor to other courts out there. We're just a perfect alternative for the perfect suited place. So I'm not here to say that this court is the best in the world, you have to use it, but it's a damn good alternative when you can't use the other options.
I think you're right. I think that's really smart. I mean, okay. Christopher, thank you for coming on Paddle Smash. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we close this out?
No, I just want to give you a shout out and your partner, because I met you guys at Racket X, and I think that there was like the best energy that I got from the whole 3 days. So I really, really like what you guys are doing at Ultra, and I really like what you guys are about. So just happy to be here.
Thank you. Julian would be here, but he had another obligation at the time, but I'll let him know that.
Yeah,
okay, Christopher, thank you so much. And
thank
I want to wish you all the luck, okay?
We are All Things Battle.